This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to today's LGIM Talks, where we'll be discussing a topic that I hope will be of interest and importance to us all, addressing the pensions pay gaps. There's a wealth of research demonstrating the gender pay gap, with women looking to receive a pension of less than 50% at retirement than men, and emerging studies showing the same findings across minority groups. Today we're going to be looking at what the contributing factors are, whether the gender pay gap is really decreasing, and what more can be done to ensure this won't continue to be a long-term issue. I'm Kim Brown, Pension Scheme Director at Legal & General, and joining me in the virtual studio today, I have Sue-Ann Song, an Investment Solutions Associate at LGIM, who will be discussing the trends she's seeing using evidence across L&G's defined contribution schemes. Welcome, Sue.
Hi, Kim.
I'm also joined by Karen Thomas, HR Director at the Chartered Insurance Institute, or CII, who'll be explaining the work that she's been doing around the gender pensions gap as part of their Ensuring Women's Futures initiative. Welcome, Karen.
Hello, thank you.
And thanks to you both for joining me today. I'm really, really looking forward to discussing some of these issues in more detail with you. And Karen, I'll start with you, if I may. Can you just tell us a bit more about the work that you're doing in Ensuring Women's Futures initiative?
IWF, Ensuring Women's Futures, predates me, sadly. I would like to have been part of that group of women who first started it off, but no, it started in 2016 and I joined the CII in last year, 2020. So IWF, it was a collaboration of women from the insurance and personal finance profession and brought together by the Insurance Supper Club working in parallel with the CII. I have to say it's a fantastic initiative, so much good work that's been done. It was market led, so it's across the organisation, across the sector. And actually we see a lot of data out there which relates back to the IWF research and data analysis, because it's some quality stuff. So the programme was established to improve women's financial resilience and to tackle barriers undermining women's long-term financial health. It is very consistent with CII purpose in terms of building public trust and evolving the profession's approach to women in society. So IWF, its overarching objectives are to raise awareness of and engagement with women's risks throughout society, to support young females' financial mindfulness in navigating the perils and pitfalls. You know, the work on pensions is particularly important. I'm mindful in terms of the number of women, proportion of women who are facing pension poverty. The lack of sufficient retirement savings means that very often they're dependent on partners if they have a partner. And after a life of caring, they risk being unable to pay for their own old age care. And we call this a longevity trap. If you bear in mind certain stats, again, captured by IWF, that the average 65-year-old female has a 35k pension pot, and that's a fifth of that of men's. And we don't want to reduce that male pension pot. We want to stay, keep that where it is, or maybe improve it. But absolutely, you know, there is a whole load of work to be done in terms of ensuring that the female pension pot gets to be a similar size. And then when we look at what's happened over the last decade, men's pensions have risen 83% more per week than women's. And lastly, or the last fact I'm going to give you here, is that if you think about the number of women who actually fall beneath the new auto-enrolment pensions eligibility threshold, so there's a heap of women who aren't actually working in the at £10,000 or more a year. So there's a whole heap of women who are in low paid, maybe contract part-time work that are below that threshold, who don't actually qualify for auto-enrolment. So there's nothing going into their pension via auto-enrolment. I hope that explains a little bit about IWF, Ensuring Women's Futures, and the good work that's been done, and you'll hear more about it.
Wow, thank you, Karen. Really appreciate you sharing the findings you've seen from the IWF. Sue, within Legal & General, you've also been doing lots of work around pensions members' retirement behaviour. Can you tell us a bit about what the recent research trends have been?
So we did a study of what choices our members are making at retirement over the last 6 years to 2020. Across our book of business, we saw that the average retirement pot is about 16,000. and cashing out is a favourite option amongst the members retiring in the last 6 years. If we look only at members with large pots, so members that have over 150,000, we see that drawdown is their preferred retirement option. Over the last 6 years, we also saw that members are accessing their pots later, and the average annuity and drawdown pots are generally increasing over time, though it did fall slightly last year as a result of market volatility. The average annuity pot is 45,000, drawdown pots 83,000, and cash pots 8,000. This year, we also looked at retirement trends in gender and industry. So if we start with gender, we saw that men are more likely to have larger pots. The average pot for a man is 21,000 compared to 10,000 for a woman. This has a significant impact on what women can expect in retirement and can be seen in the retirement choices that they make. So we saw that women are less likely to choose drawdown, and those that do have an average pot of 53,000, while men have an average pot of 100,000. Considering women have longer life expectancies, so they're expected to live to 83 years versus 79 for men, stretching that smaller pot over longer is going to be really challenging. If we look only at members with large pots, so 150,000 at least, we see that members make similar choices regardless of gender, so pot size really is one of the key drivers of retirement choices. Next, we look at whether the industry a member works in has any impact on the pensions gap and retirement choices. So we picked retail and financial services, which are two industries well represented in our book. The average retail member retires with 9,000, while the average financial services member retires with 22,000. Given the average pot size, men and women in retail equally favour cashing out. The gender pension disparity is somewhat narrower in financial services compared to retail. So we saw that women in retail retire with half the average drawdown pot of their male peers, while women in financial services have just under two-thirds the average pot that their male peers have. Surprisingly, though, that hasn't necessarily translated to greater take-up of drawdown. We still see that men in financial services are more likely to choose drawdown compared to women.
Thanks, Sue. And across both of your updates then, the stats are quite sobering, aren't they, with women on average living longer but having over half the pot size to fund their retirement than male counterparts. And as your independent figures really demonstrate, the gender pay gap, therefore, is still very much an issue in our society. Can I ask you both to comment on what you think the key causes are for these trends, and are there any signs of improvement? Karen, can I start with you?
When we look back over the last 20 years, there have been improvements, but when we look at the most recent 15 years, then that's been relatively stable. I think in the first 5 years, there was definitely low-hanging fruit, but as each year goes by, it gets tougher and tougher. For those organisations that have really put some actions in place, I think some of them are scratching their heads and thinking, well, what more can we do? You know, at the end of the day, there's going to be a gender pay gap. And at the moment, according to the Office for National Statistics, and this is in September 2020, it's 18.4%, and it's higher in financial services. That gender pay gap will remain whilst there are structural differences within organisations. There's been big improvements in terms of the number of women, for example, on boards. But whilst women on boards and in senior positions in organisations aren't, there isn't that same proportion of women in senior roles in organisations, then there is going to be that inequity and the gender pay gap will remain. Why will it remain? So I've covered in terms of senior roles, more men than women. There is an assumption, I think, that senior jobs will require long hours and constant availability, and that this can't be done flexibly. And that will then deter some women from applying or some women being offered the role. So what we need to do there is redesign senior roles so that they're suitable for everyone. Second reason as to why this remains is caring responsibilities. So women still have a larger part of responsibility for caring within the home with children, with elderly parents, etc. And it's then more challenging for them to take on those senior roles and that then command the higher salaries. And also part-time work, you know, it's hard for women to get part-time work at the senior level. I would also add, actually, it's hard for men to get part-time jobs. So I think it works both ways. So again, it's here about redesigning the workplace, redesigning expectations, flexibility, work patterns, etc., in order to achieve greater equality in the workplace. Also, in terms of the gap, women in low-paid roles, the typically sectors in nursing, caring, you know, we see more women as nurses, we see more men as surgeons. So again, there are structural reasons in our society as to why women are earning less money, and that gender pay gap will persist. And then the last one I want to touch on is that women are being paid less than men for the same role. Now, that should be covered by the Equal Pay Act. We know that. But actually, sometimes that's not always straightforward. So when I think, for example, over the last few years, there's been quite interesting case law around comparators. And there was an interesting case in terms of men working within warehousing and comparators of women doing similar roles in the organisation. That we have the Equal Pay Act, and if you have a direct like-for-like comparison and there are men doing the same role as a female, then it's a straight, there'll be equal pay. But actually, it's not always quite that simple, and the comparator might be a slightly different role. And so there's still a feeling in terms of there might be different roles, but actually in terms of competency level, skill level, knowledge level, they are the same, but those roles in which women dominate still are receiving less pay. So lots of reasons here in terms of the gender pay gap, in terms of why it's persisting. And, you know, we can see here there's various options in terms of redesigning the place of work, more part-time roles, greater emphasis in terms of flexibility in the workplace, ensuring that we're promoting women into those senior roles, et cetera, will help to reduce the gender pay gap going forward.
Perfect. Really clear, Claren. And Sue, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Karen on that. I think taking a break from your career to have children is quite a setback for a lot of people. So some stats from the University of Bristol and Wales show that 28% of women are back in full-time work 3 years after childbirth compared to 90% of new dads. And that has a lot of impact on, I guess, your pod growth, because you may cease contributing during that time, or when you do come back, it does sort of limit your career and pay progression. But I do think that it is improving. So, for example, the mass adoption of work from home because of the pandemic has seen a lot more men get involved in family responsibilities. And there's a lot wider acceptance as well amongst like the employers to see these shared arrangements make it a lot easier for men to take a career break to prioritize families. So for example, in the news this morning, I heard that, for example, the head of Bonds at Janus Henderson, he's in his mid-40s and he announced that he was going to take a career break to spend more time with his family. So I think if we normalize prioritizing your family, whether you're a man or a woman, that could really help balance out the gender imbalance that we see in senior roles that Karen just mentioned.
Great, thanks, Sue. If we look forward now and thinking about some of the key trends now, LGIM have been looking at research and seen that COVID-19 is the biggest worry for those approaching retirement. And that trend, again, has come out particularly strongly across women. Do you think that men and women have different expectations in retirement? And do you think recent events have impacted that?
Yeah, I think the expectations are definitely very different in retirement. So when women hit retirement, unfortunately, that doesn't mean they also retire from the caretaking responsibilities. Mm-hmm. A lot of them still help out looking after grandchildren, elderly parents, or even their partners. In terms of recent events, I think as mentioned earlier, market volatility did have some impact on pot sizes. So people may have to stay and work a bit longer than expected to make up for the shortfalls in their pots. And finally, working from home during the pandemic has been tough on a lot of people. But in particular, over a third of women said that their careers have been negatively affected during the pandemic, which only further impact their career and pay progression that we already see.
Great. And I think that we all hope and we're starting to perhaps see that the women retiring in the future might be in quite a different position than those retiring now. What do you think, if anything, can be done now to sort of bridge that gap, though, and sort of looking forwards, what can we do to sort of support the future generations? Karen, if I could ask you to start.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think the outlook looks a lot better, which is great. in that younger women are saving more, so great. The IWF manifesto identifies some distinct options and distinct challenges and things that can be done. So, for example, one of them is improving the visibility of women in law, policy and practice, making sure that we understand the challenges for women and then adopting the right sort of policies, practices, and in that, ensuring that our language is gender neutral. Secondly, change the conversations, empowering women through tailored approaches to financial engagement, guidance, financial advice, you know, ensuring that at the different stages of a female life cycle, that we interact with a female with products, with services that are going to appeal to her, given her different life stage. Thirdly, empowering girls to be more money-minded, you know, removing that gender stereotyping and improving the financial awareness of girls. We know today that women are less likely to engage in financial conversations. They're less likely to seek the services of a financial planner, for example. We've got to remove that. And we've got to set it as an expectation that actually men will take responsibility and absolutely work their financial goals as much as men. We've got to achieve pension parity, and there's lots of employers that can do around that, making sure, for example, that we continue pension contributions when people take a career break, perhaps. Making sure that there are flexible arrangements that support people's financial futures. At the CII and as part of IWF, you know, we, for its signatories, we ask people to commit to when a woman is make an adjustment to her work pattern, for example, perhaps she's going on a career break or takes some time out, that she understands the impact. She understands the impact on her future retirement pot, because my gosh, that time goes by so quickly and it will have a direct impact on her retirement. Is she aware of it? You know, are there accommodations that she or her employer can make? So lots of things that can be done. It's good to see that it is improving, but we still get that chunk of women for whom I fear that retirement may look bleak.
Thanks, Karen. And Sue, final thoughts?
Yes, definitely true what Karen's been speaking about. So I guess when we look at our workforce population, which is like 4 million members, we also see that women have lower average pot sizes at any age band. However, it really starts to diverge at 35 plus, and it just gets wider and wider to retirement. And I guess that's where we can see that women take a step back mid-career around age 30 to 49 and then return to work when their kids have grown up a little bit. And stats from University of Bristol and Wales show that mothers who leave employment are 3 times more likely to return to a lower paid or lower responsibility role than those that don't take a break. So really, I think the areas to focus on here, how can we help these women keep growing their pots during this time? Like, for example, can employers keep up contributions during these career gaps or when they do come back to work part-time? And for some women, that might mean they're not eligible for auto-enrollment, but they can choose to opt in, so they should be encouraged to, or at least given the information about it. And I think finally, the changes we see in the workplace at the moment that make it a bit more equal for men and women to share caring responsibilities really does help. And if we see more of that, I think that makes a lot of difference for the future generations.
Great. Karen, Sue, thank you so much for joining me today and speaking with such passion and eloquence on this topic. And thanks to all those that have listened to this LGM Talks. I think while it's clear there's still so many challenges in ensuring everyone will have sufficient savings in retirement, hopefully you've enjoyed today's discussion and heard about the progress that has been made, but also the steps that we can all do to continue to push this forwards.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording, and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and general investment management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, LGIM.com.